And welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT at 9.5 FM. You can write to us, taylor@ciut.fm. And, of course, we're on the web, taylor-report.com. Phil Conlon is here. How you doing, Phil?
Yes, good afternoon.
Going to talk to Stephen Gowans in about a half hour. Stephen Gowans has written an excellent piece. It's, you know, Gowans, WordPress.com. And I really recommend you go to that site. He's got his sites on the issue of secular government wars with jihadists, and he's exploring the question of why the secular government of Egypt, as it's called, gets $1.3 billion a year from the U.S. and its NATO friends. And meanwhile, the government of Syria, which is also a secular government, besieged by jihadis and by an organization called the Muslim Brotherhood, is on the target list for removal. So Steve Gowans can sort that one out, because we've, you know, remember that there was an election in Egypt, and the army candidates lost, and a man who was associated with the Muslim Brotherhood won the election. Now the army is in power, and John Kerry and Obama think that's fine, that's good. But meanwhile, over in Syria, different story. So we'll talk about that. And I want to say, by the way, that Black History Month is coming up, and we're going to be featuring some programs on the subject of Black history. We mentioned last week that there's this film, Selma. We talked to Norman Otis Richmond, the bluesologist, historian. He told us that, that it's a film to be seen and to be seen critically, but, you know, this is a very important film, a very important story. And Selma is not doing as well in the box office as I thought it was going to be doing, given all the publicity. And we'll go into that a little bit later on. But one thing we want to make sure we celebrate is the return to Canada and to Toronto of Gary Freeman, who was an associate librarian. I'm always a little unclear about that title, but I never was one, so I raised a wonderful family here in Toronto, a great guy by all accounts. And because of his problems with a government in the United States in the late 60s, early 70s, which everyone agrees was a segregationist-style system, and is and remains one in which black lives are less valuable than white. The prisons are full of African Americans, and many we know have been killed on the streets. And Gary Freeman was from that culture, and he had a violent encounter with a policeman. Fortunately, he was able to come to Canada and live, but they stalked him for years. And it's here, despite all his great accomplishments here, just as an individual and as a decent member of the community, they insisted on their pound of flesh. And he's gone through a lot, and he is back. And Canadians should be very happy about that, although they need to question how this all unfolded in any event. So in future programming, I'm sure we'll get a chance to talk about it. And so, Phil, let's talk over some news between now and Mr. Gowans. And the first one is that there's been an election of a socialist government in Greece. You remember socialists, by the way?
Yes. Well, it turns out the Greeks remember who they are and reacted very positively to a socialist message that said that bankers in other countries are not going to make policy for the Greek people.
Particularly one country, very famous one.
Very famous one, yes. Yeah, a country with a nasty history of involvement
now,
in Greece.
I should ask you, you have a little command of German. I saw a photograph of a woman holding up a sign. It seemed to be saying, "Good night, Merkel." Now, did you happen to see that photograph?
I didn't see the photograph, but I might guess that it was one of the demonstrators from the German Left Party, because the German Left Party had a party in the street in Berlin last night, and they said congratulations to the Greek people, and thank you.
Did they really?
They yes. really did. They really did. And it's a, and which is wonderful, of course, because Merkel is trying to cast this. She says, well, the Greeks want the German taxpayers to take a hit on their behalf. And I think, no, they want the German bankers to take a hit. That's the same thing as the taxpayers.
Well, yeah, and across the board, you know, it's finally dawned on people that the sovereignty of a people really matters, and that if you accept economic diktat from someone who is actually a private operation, it's, you know, banks, that you have to follow what they say for your people. You, at a certain point, unfortunately, democracy doesn't work that way. And it's probably, you know, there might be bankers who don't like it, but that's how it goes, you know. And it's people should remind bankers, you know, you could be an ex-banker. It's because that's how, that's why the dirty word of democracy, you know, gets on, it worries powerful people. We hear about the enormous fortunes that dictate the U.S., where it's the dollar. But, you know, finally, people have to answer for themselves and say, this is who we're going to, we want to run things. In Argentina, they had this, we all know the, you know, the pushback from Argentina, who simply said, no, we don't bow to that. We are going to exercise the will of the Argentine people. And that turned out to be a very popular idea. Widespread, a spreading phenomenon. So, yes, this is quite a development. And it came comes at a time when, if you remember, Bob Rae declared socialism dead. So, I don't know, he should probably send a message to the new Greek leader saying, you can't win with that one. That's a loser.
Yeah. Well, he couldn't win with that one because I don't think he ever really believed in it.
Somebody might say that he brought the brand down himself. Yeah. But at any rate, I mean, this business of, oh, that political ideology is gone and this one is the only one, very odd idea about the economic and political culture that things are written in stone. And that is, by the way, statues, those things are made, they're stone, and people come and knock them to pieces. We have a lot of missing statues in history just because people said, well, we no longer are in awe of that. That's something to remember. You know, also, and speaking of remembering, I am concerned that people seem to be looking into the rearview mirror about World War II. And, for example, we are now marking the anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz, which was symbolically one of the great accomplishments, and it told the world the reality of Nazism. But because of the contemporary politics, we're getting, the fog is moving in over who did what. And President Putin was not invited to this event. Did we talk about this last week on the show? I hope we did. We should focus on this because people are manipulating events and manipulating who will be there, who will not be there, who will be allowed to talk. And Putin, at first the story was he wasn't going to go, like he wasn't going to show up. But then the Russian government said they had not been invited. So then they asked the Polish government, well, it's your show, isn't it? I mean, so did you invite him or not? And then they said, well, no, we don't have any say over that. That's actually a private institution that has the say. And they chose not to, which sounded an awful lot like passing somebody's buck, probably ours. This is bad, I would say. Let's put it this way. It's bad. So then they said, well, of course, they could send somebody, and they did. There is a representative there, but it is not Putin. But meanwhile, I'm talking about looking at history through the, you know, the rearview mirror. And then, by the way, World War II is moving. It's a worrying thing. It's over the horizon almost. And people are definitely doing things. The government of Ukraine is going to be represented by their president. Now, in his government, there is a prime minister, and the prime minister was in Germany recently, and he pointed out, to the astonishment of everybody, people were still slapping their foreheads trying to figure out what he could have been thinking, but he said that we'll want to remember that Germany and Ukraine were invaded by Russia. And everybody looked at each other and said, in what sense? but actually, it went basically unremarked. Because, well, this is one of those inconvenient kind of personalities and point of view which is creeping in now to European culture. And some Americans pointed out that while it's true that Russia, that would be actually the Soviet Union, they did not call themselves Russia, entered Germany, that was because they got invited by the Germans who invaded them and everybody else that they could invade, and that in fact the Americans and British also invaded. Incidentally, it wasn't an invasion because they were engaged with an army that had entered, had assaulted its neighbors, and so in pursuit of the army, unless that army will surrender, you're going to follow it, and that army didn't surrender till they were whipped. It was ugly, really ugly. A real war, by the way. People going to the sniper, I want to tell you, you ought to read about real wars. That the occupation of a country that didn't declare war on you is, that's not big league stuff. That's interesting, but it's not a real war. World War II, that was a real war. So to my mind, this is a sign that we are losing our bearings on in terms of what the issues were. And no, I don't think it'll be corrected because now we have a mini war going. And not a mini, but I'd call this now a medium-sized war going on along the Dnieper River. And it gets a little more dangerous every day of the week. And unless somebody agrees that they start talking to each other as equals and not go by diktat, we might get a whiff of the real thing. But it's certainly, at this moment, we have too many people irresponsibly talking about these things and rewriting or attempting to seriously distort history. That's why there was a resolution at the United Nations, at the General Assembly, only a month or so ago, which said, this is what the resolution said, combating glorification of Nazism, neo-Nazism, and other practices that contribute to fueling contemporary forms of racism, racial discrimination, xenophobia, and related intolerance. And that passed overwhelmingly. Thank heaven. This was a resolution condemning glorification of Nazism and neo-Nazism and other practices, blah, blah, that contribute. Well, some among the countries voted for that, Afghanistan, Algeria, there's most of your enemies who, I'm looking, there's a lot of abstentions. South Africa voted yes. Sri Lanka voted yes, and Netherlands abstained, and Nepal was yes, Guyana was yes, Haiti was yes on that, and Indonesia, India all voted yes to neo-Nazism. Anyway, three countries voted no, Ukraine, and the United States, and Canada. They voted against condemning Nazism and neo-Nazism. And they didn't abstain. I mean, a lot of people did abstain because, see, this is all politics and everybody's saying, well, I don't want to be voting with these guys and I don't want to be voting with those. So they voted that. By the way, I want to you know, Israel voted for that. They said, yes, of course, you denounce Nazism and neo-Nazism. But the United States said no, and Ukraine said no, and Canada said no. Nobody bothered to ask our government to explain that, how we would stand out like a sore thumb on the issue of rising of this phenomena. And let's not kid ourselves. This thing is growing in Europe. Neo-Nazism is on the rise, and everyone knows that, but it's not on the number one item on our agenda, as it should be, which, at any rate, brings us to another topic here. Oh, Cuba, by the way, are you following that, Phil? That
yes.
The Cubans and the Americans are having talks.
They certainly are.
And are you, well, I'll just tell you what I've seen. The U.S. says that that they're very candid conversations, and that the U.S. side is raising human rights issues, and that but they're not seeing any movement from the other side, from Cuba. The element that interested me was that the Cubans, we learn, if you want to kind of, you have to read to the end of the article, the last paragraphs, the Cubans asked about Ferguson, and they asked about why there are so many black Americans in America's prisons.
In other words, Cuba is raising human rights issues.
Yes. Funny thing. Are they allowed to do that? I thought we only began to do that. Yeah. See, I guess if I watch Fox and CNN, you know, I will be reassured that nobody gets to raise that. But they asked about Ferguson. They asked about prisons. And they said, why does America have more people in prisons per capita than any other country on earth? If this is the country of freedom, etc. I think, I don't know if they asked him about Saudi Arabia, but as was pointed out by Glenn Greenwald and others, the president of the United States was over, you know, was said he was in a state of grief over the death of the king of Saudi Arabia. And in Saudi Arabia, the Wahhabi regime there practices decapitation as a form of punishment, and not only for Saudis, but anybody who happens to be within the kingdom. They, if you write a poem they don't like, or they heard that you were thinking of writing a poem they didn't like, you could this could happen to you. It is an absolute monarchy, and yet the head of the IMF, and this would make you give you an idea what sort of goofy world we're living in, is a woman, and she congratulated the late king on being a reformer and a friend, supporter of women. That would be news, I think, in Saudi Arabia, if they were allowed to have news. That would really be a serious joke. I mean, a lame attempt. But you see, she's with the IMF, and the Saudis put money into the IMF, and so you get what you buy, I guess. And we're back to the point about congratulations to Greece, that you have to stand up to this kind of phenomenon. But here we have the United States actually being quoted as having a you know, tete-a-tete with Cuba and raising human rights issues. And you say, you're a lying blankety-blankety-blank, because Saudi Arabia is your chum, and you never care. You provide every last fancy murdering weapon that you can to them. And then you also allow them to finance jihadis all over the place. And let's be very clear about the jihadis that we're hearing about, the IS and the ISIS and whatever, and it's an Al Qaeda and Taliban. They have the same ideology as the royal family of Saudi Arabia. This is Wahhabism. It's a minority group. It has a point of view. It's highly sectarian. It's between Muslims to decide what sort of estimate to put on them. But there is absolutely no question who they are. So to be hearing this, that it, or that the United States claims to care about human rights, you know, you have to be as foolish as the woman who represents the U.S. in the United Nations. She is very selective in who it is that she thinks is minus human rights. You know, there's a country there that Canada needs to remember called Haiti. And Haiti elected a president named Aristide, the most popular president in Haitian history, bar none, more popular than probably than Toussaint himself. He had to, commanded the respect from one end of Haiti to the other. And the U.S. removed him, not once, twice. And each time, he didn't have any say in the matter. And now the U.S. says it wants to warm up to Cuba and help him with the human rights. Well, Cuba's question has to be, you believe in human rights, why did you remove Mr. Aristide? And why do you think you have a right to have U.S. Marines sitting there in Port-au-Prince? What kind of human rights are you representing? So it's, but the Toronto Star and others, they just, you know, blah, blah, blah. Well, you know, America cares about human rights. And they don't. And really, somebody sane has to comment on that. Last matter I want to make sure I say something further about is the movie American Sniper. And no, I didn't see it. I've been reading about it, and I intend to see it. But I think the American Mr. Eastwood is somewhat subversive, as he's subverting the morale of the American military. He's misleading us as to what a hero is, and that's really problematic. And the hero himself is also, to my mind, very. I'm talking about his book and who he represented. He was represented as. There used to be a thing about, we were told about the special forces, special ops, Navy SEALs, the guys who took out Osama, etc. And it was one thing was that they didn't try to profit from it. In recent years, there's been a lot of profiting, and it's turning into this old problem that they used to say, the cops would say about crooks, you know, as a crime happens and they're looking for the guy, and the first one to turn himself in and plead will get a good deal. And there's an analogy with this. If you were part of an operation and you can play on that a reputation, then you get to be, you can make the most money. Now, he became very marketable because, this is Mr. Chris Kyle, because he was, they said, the number one. See, this is like winning the Super Bowl. He was the number one most lethal in American history, blah, blah. Well, Matt Taibbi, Rolling Stone magazine, put his finger on a problem. He said, in the book, Chris Kyle says that they had competition going with other snipers, and that his commanding officer would report to him that so-and-so, the other sniper, had killed a certain number of people, was closing in on him. He said, at that point, my scope would start to find bad people at an amazing rate. Really? It sounds like you're killing people to keep your numbers up, which is not the purpose of combat. The purpose, let's try to remind everybody, because it seems to be long since forgotten. The purpose is to win. The purpose is to prevail. It is not to kill anybody. The purpose is to prevail. If you are a smart officer and you can arrange your troops in an appropriate manner, the other guy will realize that he's done for and give up, and nobody gets hurt. The point isn't to kill him. The people who cross that line are starting to lose their minds. They don't even know what they're there for. So when you have a guy who says, I wish I killed more, and that they're all savages, and makes jokes about this, then you have a guy who's very bad for morale. And when he makes fun of other branches of the service, that's also an irritating point. If you want telling me that the U.S. Marine Corps needed help from a Navy sniper to know how to kick in the door of a house to get the bad guys, you have seriously insulted me. And I can tell you the commandant of the Marine Corps is not happy with that characterization because, see, everybody's trying to recruit. So if you're saying the one wing of the service is they can't get it done, but the other can, you're just recruiting. And those kind of things don't go down well, which leads to fistfights in San Diego, I know for sure. And people ought to ask, well, what's the mission? You have a man who calls other soldiers who don't do what he thinks they should do. He calls them women. Now, I heard that the U.S. was integrating women into the military. Well, not according to the Kyle model. A woman doesn't even belong there, according to him. But by the way, the chief commanding officer at the moment, I think, one of the highest ranking, is a woman. So what is Kyle's position on her? Well, I'd like to know what her position is about him. To me, this is what I call degeneration or decline of standards. You know, there are a lot of snipers. He, by the way, said he wasn't the best shot. I agree with him. I understand. He said he almost didn't qualify. I can identify. I was in the Marine Corps. I almost didn't qualify too, which makes me worry about all this super shooting that he was allegedly doing. There's some kind of a mistake being made here. He seems to be willing to kill. He tells us that all the time. A last point I want to make sure I say about him. Somebody better look into this matter that he formed a company. Now, by the way, that's exploiting your military experience. And private businessmen would take crash courses from him that would last 3 days, and then they pay him. And then he had other things going. But the logo of his company is called Punisher. It's a skull. I don't like to see skulls personally. I associated with World War II and the Nazis and Franco's army. They like to wear skulls. He said he wore the skull on his combat gear to put the fear of something in the Iraqi opponent. Well, I'll tell you something, Kyle, it didn't work. They seem to fight. They're still fighting. So that's silly. That's just childish. And the other thing, he got a tattoo. I don't know if it features in the movie, but he got a tattoo, and he knew all about that tattoo. He called it the Templar Cross. Do you know what that is, Phil? You ever heard of the Templar Cross?
I do not know.
It's the Crusader's Cross.
Oh, the Crusader's, of course.
Yes. And,
well, he's a Crusader.
Yes. And you will find that all over Europe in the white power movements. It is their favorite symbol because they think they're engaged in a holy war. Now, when he was asked, why do you have the tattoo? Why did you get it during your time that you're serving? He said he wanted them to know he was a Christian. So I'm thinking, I want everybody to think about this. They knew he was a Christian. Did they think an American soldier from Texas was not a Christian? What do you think they thought he was? And when he says, I want them to think I'm a Christian, why didn't you wear a cross? If you want to say you're a crusader, you put on a crusader cross. See, that's a different kind of Christian. That's the kind of crusader Christian who, when they in the 1100 or whatever, 2 through 13, when they arrived in Jerusalem, they killed the Muslims, they killed the Christians, and they killed the Jews because all of them were not the right kind of Christians. So the Christian right, and particularly in Europe, loved the crusader cross. And I think we should all look into it. You know about the name Breivik, the guy in Norway?
The Norwegian man who killed 77 people.
You go to his, there are websites with his pictures. You'll find the Crusader cross on his left breast in most of the pictures. So I say that anybody doing that is not qualified, doesn't belong there, should have been removed. And don't worry, you're not going to run out of snipers. The place is full of people who are trained and could be a good sniper and don't feel the need to pretend they're crusading. So anyway, we'll talk more about the American sniper sometime.